Working Cows Podcast, episode 96.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Hi, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. Sorry about the tardiness of these last few weeks of episodes. I've been very busy trying to move out of our house and into another living situation. So, yeah, it's been a hectic and busy time of the year with spring turnout and everything else going on around here. So, appreciate your patience and try to get back to a little bit more normal schedule. Talk a little bit more about that in the outro of this show if you're interested in that. From my personal perspective, you can stick around and we'll appreciate that. So we are joined today by Aaron Berger. Have an opportunity to talk to him about his article released in the June edition of the UNL Beef Watch newsletter. So we will be discussing what I would call a listicle from Aaron in the June edition of the Beef Watch pod or newsletter. You can get a link to that at workingcows.net/96. So, Aaron, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
I appreciate the opportunity, Clay.
Good to have you back. And we are going to talk about your June article from the UNL Beef Watch newsletter, 10 things to consider when evaluating moving calving date. And in the opening to that article, you say that the recent severe weather has caused some people to maybe rethink about when they're calving and what they could do to move that calving date. And this article is basically centered around the idea of taking a systems approach to looking at the ripple effects that move might have in your business. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. But first, I would like to ask you if you've got any kind of an update or new information regarding that severe weather and the flooding that they experienced, especially in eastern Nebraska, but also the snow in western Nebraska. Has there been any more information that you might be able to give from a little bit more boots on the ground perspective about the loss that was that happened there and some of those things?
So I think we're still looking at reporting coming in terms of total cattle loss. I have not heard any firm numbers yet. There were some numbers that were released earlier that were off in terms of the volume or amount, but I think the impact of that weather still impacting us today. I think seeing cattle that are just struggling from a disease standpoint, just trying to recover from the stress of that event, and also just the weather we've had in terms of cold and wet in Nebraska. A lot of flooded areas, of course, the water's gone, but now the ramifications of trying to get things cleaned up is still going to be occurring. And I think also we just need to realize that this is going to be a long-term event, and visiting with some of the folks who work with FEMA and some other folks, they're saying, you know, you're looking at an 8 or 9 year event to recover from an event like this. And 8 or 9 years seems like a really long time. And I think in many of these communities, in many cases, these communities are not going to be back where they were before. It's just that event has forever changed the landscape, forever changed what's there and how it's going to look. So that's, I guess, kind of an update. I think, again, support or appreciate the support of people who listen to your podcast, those that have donated both cash or in-kind donation in terms of fencing material, feed, certainly helpful, encouraging. I also think if you know folks have been impacted by this, just be sensitive to where they're at. I think going to be some folks struggling just with discouragement, disappointment, depression through this. Many cases, things that they've spent their whole lives building are now gone and not going to be able to be replaced. And so be aware of where they're at. And if you're working with somebody that's, you think, in a place where they need to get some help, get them to some help. I think that's important. And I think in the ag community, we don't talk about that. We tend to be pretty stoic, self-reliant. And this is a situation where I think we're going to see a lot of folks struggling, and just being aware of that. And being sensitive to it and not afraid to engage in some maybe challenging or hard conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was bummed we missed the opportunity with the South Dakota Farm Bureau Young Farmers and Ranchers Committee, their annual conference. We missed the opportunity to have somebody come in and talk about mental health aspects of farming and ranching. And I think it is, like you said, something that we tend to, you know, stuff down deep, sweep under the rug, whatever metaphor you want to use. And so it's going to be incumbent upon people who are not dealing with those things necessarily themselves to maybe go out of their way to, in a sensitive, discerning sort of way, ask a question and pitch in and help where they are able, so that people are able to have some help in bearing those burdens. So we turn our attention to this article, and there are basically 10 questions that are laid out in your article. And we're talking about, you know, things like, how would the proposed move match cow nutrient requirements with the quantity and quality of available feed resources? And just back on episode 90, had the opportunity to talk to Dallas Mountain. We talked to him about kind of what we are looking at as some targets that maybe we should be thinking about as part of a healthy ranch. And he stressed that there is no such thing as a prescription for running a financially and economically healthy ranch. But one thing that he did mention is that one of the bigger lever points that we have available to us is figuring out a way to cut fed feed out of the businesses that we are running, or not maybe all the way out, but reduce it significantly out of the businesses that we are running. And so is that where you see the consideration of moving calving season being something that's worth considering, because it is a point at which you can cut that fed feed out or reduce it, because you are able to access more grazed feeds at that time of year?
So I think it sure is an important piece of the equation. I think, as I even think about Nebraska, though, it's really interesting. We look at the value of grass in Nebraska, and there's times, Clay, where harvested feed is competitive with grazed feed. And that's not always the case, but it can be. And there's places in eastern Nebraska where their largest resource and most inexpensive feed resource is crop residue. So I really think it's about understanding, what's my feed resources, what's the cost of those, not only if I was to go purchase them, but to actually get them into the belly of a cow, and understanding your entire production system. So I would agree. I would think in many cases, most cases, that if we can find ways to reduce the amount of harvested feed as part of our production system, is to our advantage, not only the cost of the feed, but the infrastructure, labor, equipment needed to deliver that to the animals. But I also would say that I've seen scenarios where that having some harvested feed as part of their system still was a fit, and they were economical and profitable. So as Dallas said, and I would really agree, there's not a recipe, but I think you want to take a look at your whole system and see where there's some leverage points where making some changes from a feed cost standpoint could help you out.
You know, and another thing that you mentioned in that same paragraph is, moving calving date may decrease supplementation feeding or feeding at certain physiological states, but at the same time increase resource needs at other periods of the year. Can you tell me about what you're thinking about with that sentence?
Yeah, so I think I'm just going to pick a calving date that's pretty common in the Northern Great Plains. Let's say early March for a start time. And if you think about when that cow calves, and then you think about that time between calving and breeding, she's probably on some harvested feed, or should be in many cases, between March and the early to mid part of May. If we're a March 1 calving date, we're going to be putting bulls in somewhere around the 20th of May. And then really, if you think about when's our highest quality feed in the Northern Great Plains, it's really in that mid-May to mid-late June time period. That's when we have a lot of both quality and quantity coming on pretty strong. Well, that also correlates with that cow's nutrient requirements in terms of moving into or right past her peak lactation requirements. We're around 50, 60 days post-calving, and then her moving into the breeding season. So we've matched that cow's requirements in terms of her needs right prior to and through breeding. But if we would change calving date, and let's say we move from March 1st now to May 15th, now instead of having bulls turned in with the cows on May 20th, you know, we're pushing that out to late July, early August. Well, if we think about what's happening in terms of forage quality, in terms of what's grazed, typically we're seeing forage quality decline from mid-July on, in many cases across the northern Great Plains on into the fall. So now we have a cow that's on a decreasing plane of nutrition. And again, we've moved the calving date, so she still has pretty high nutrient requirements. So we might have reduced the amount of what we need to feed in terms of harvested feed early on, but we may have a cow that from a biological systems perspective, in terms of her genetic needs and genetic potential, is producing more milk than really the resource can support in terms of her getting back into shape and maintaining our reproductive efficiency when she's on a declining plane of nutrition. So that's what I was thinking about. If we shift our calving date significantly, and we've had cows that are higher producing cows, and they historically have been on the best feed of the year from a forage available from a grazing perspective right prior to and through breeding, and then we shift when we breed those cows, and they're now on a declining plane of nutrition in terms of quality of forage, that can challenge us in terms of getting those cows to maintain a pregnancy. And I think it's important to understand that, especially when we look at what's happened genetically with cows in the United States. I would say over the last 30 years, almost every breed has seen an increase in mature size and an increase in the amount of milk production. Now, there's a few breeds that haven't changed very much, but if you look at breed trends, the major breeds like Angus, Hereford, have sure seen an increase in milk production. Simmental, Gilvey, some of those were already higher producing in terms of milk production. So thinking about the demands of milk production and also correlating that with the demands of reproduction, thinking about when those cows are being bred, we need to be aware of that if we shift calving date and what might be the impact to the cow.
And as I said in the introduction, I'll say again, the article that we're discussing is from the June edition of the Beef Watch newsletter. It will be linked at the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/96. So if you want to check that out, workingcows.net/96, you can go ahead and do that. One sentence from paragraph number two or question number two: how would the move impact the quality of feed that is grazed or fed specifically in the window from the time of calving through breeding? Kind of what we were just talking about there. This sentence stuck out to me. First calf heifers and young cows are still growing and may be challenged nutritionally to have adequate protein and energy to achieve acceptable pregnancy rates when a decreasing plane of nutrition in the period prior to and through the breeding season, when on a decreasing plane of nutrition in the period prior to and through the breeding season. So kind of basically what you just were saying there as a little bit of a backup from your article, similar idea there communicated in paragraph number two or question number two. Any other things that you wanted to add there?
Yeah, I guess I think I would say that we've done some research at the Goodmanson Sandhills Lab, and I say we, that's really the University of Nebraska, looking at two different calving times, basically a March traditional calving time and then a May. And we've seen, as we've saw those cows that were in the March herd move to a May herd, a challenge at times, especially even in replacement heifers. And you wouldn't think this would be the case, but replacement heifers being bred in late summer, and it can again vary from year to year, and we got to understand variation in precipitation, quality of forage that can occur. But we've seen even some of those situations where you would not think a heifer, a virgin heifer that's being turned out with bulls for the first time, would struggle nutritionally, but we've seen situations where their reproductive performance has been less than we sure would have expected based on their body weight and the condition they were at the time of the start of breeding. So it's some of these females that are still in the growth mode, I would say, still growing themselves. When we change the plane of nutrition where they're either just maintaining or even losing some condition, that triggers some things in terms of those young females being able to maintain a pregnancy that can impact them. I would also say that recently we've started to see some change there also to heifers that were in that system. What I mean by that is they were heifer calves born in that May system and now coming into production themselves. They seem to be maybe adapting to or adjusting to that a little better than some cows that made the move from March to May. Don't really understand why, but there does appear to be maybe some changes occurring there. So I think there is the potential we can work our way through this genetically selecting for animals that are more adapted to that later calving season. But for folks who are thinking about making the move, they need to understand that there could be some potential disappointment in what they see in terms of reproduction on young females, higher risk females, and when they make that move from a March to a May, June type calving situation.
When you talk about pushing them and selecting genetically, are you talking about less milk and less frame? Is it as simple as that? Or is there more to it than that in your mind?
Well, I think you got to know where your cow herd's at. And I think in many cases, folks have used bulls that were at or above breed average for a number of years. And when you look at what's happened, we've put more milk and more growth into these cattle really across the board. So what I think is that you have to think of, there's obviously diversity in your herd. And if you make the shift, you have to decide first, I think you have to ask the question, should I keep these same cows if I move my calving date? And for many folks, that would be pretty hard for them to sell their cow herd and buy cows that are in a later calving situation. But I think it's a legitimate question, and we should talk about it a little more just in terms of the economic value that what happens when you take a March calving cow and you turn her into a May-June calving cow. But in terms of selection, yes, I think you want to identify those cows that seem to be working in the system, those cows that are calving early, heifer calves that are born early. And I think having a short breeding season for those heifers initially, those things start to have a snowball effect, so to speak, and you can over time start to work yourself into cows that more fit that system.
Absolutely. And is there any way that you are seeing people who are managing in this way, namely a May-June calving season in western Nebraska, where there is a decreasing plane of nutrition in July and August when those bulls would be turning out? Is there some ways that you see them managing that so that those cows are on a positive plane of nutrition? Or is that just generally they are a survival of the fittest type operation, and those cows that don't fit just don't make it?
So I guess what I would see is I've seen some people who have been at it for a lot of years, I'd say 20, 25. Those folks are in a situation where they have cows that are achieving very acceptable reproductive rates with limited or no supplementation right prior to and through the breeding season. And then I'm also working with some folks that have just recently made the change and have been disappointed with what they've seen in terms of reproductive rates on especially young females. And so what we're starting to see some folks think about doing is providing actually some supplementation right prior to and through the breeding season, especially for, I'd say, yearling heifers, first calf heifers, 3-year-olds that are still growing themselves and seeing some improvement in reproductive efficiency. Now, some folks would say, well, you're just propping up those cows. You're helping them out. That's not going to get you to where you want to go very fast. And I can understand that challenge. The other thing is, though, if you come in with a 60% pregnancy rate, economically, that doesn't work.
Right.
And so there's sometimes some tensions I think we have to work through. Recognizing where we want to be is not where we are right now. And maybe we have some cows genetically that are part of our system right now that's not where we want to be. But sometimes you got to think through, how do we make that transition in a way that can keep us in business?
Sure. Do you see people using cover crops at all in those situations, or is that maybe not the most economical way to increase a plane of nutrition?
I see limited use of that here from a breeding standpoint. I think there's some places east of here where pasture's really in short supply, where you'll see some annual forages as part of the production system. You know, I think there's some things we can do from a management perspective if we have cows on pasture. You know, turning cows into some fresh pasture right prior to the breeding season, maybe moving them a little more frequently, keeping them on a higher plane of nutrition in terms of giving them greater selectivity right prior to and through the early parts of the breeding season can be another tool to use to try to have that plane of nutrition be at its best. So I don't want to give the impression that providing it or trying to change the nutrition situation can only be done through a supplementation scenario. That's certainly not it. But those are some different things people can do to try to mitigate this decreasing plane of nutrition right prior to and through breeding.
Sure. And, you know, my dad and I were having a conversation the other day, and we leased some grass from a family that's third or fourth generation on the same place. And he said, we've always had a better breed up in this one particular pasture. And it's because that one particular pasture is as flat as it gets, basically, in eastern Montana. And those cows or those bulls can see basically all the way across that pasture from one side to the other. And so maybe a pasture that's more conducive to the bulls being able to see where there is a cow in heat and get to her and get her bred in a reasonable amount of time is part of the equation, too, that we can think about as far as selecting the pasture that they're going to be in at that time of year.
Yeah, I think, you know, we haven't really done any studies there, but there's certainly, we know that forage quality right prior to and through breeding certainly impacts conception rates in terms of retaining that pregnancy and not having those cows come back into heat there. A lot of pregnancy loss happens. It's just that pregnancy has not been recognized. And we have some good research out of Nebraska now that really shows nutrition sure seems to have an impact on that. And so that's the point I guess I would bring is that's pretty important to reproductive efficiency.
You mentioned in question number three, the weaning weight issue. What impact is this going to have on the weaning weights? Is that an issue where the input can offset the lost revenue, or is there a major concern here?
So I think some of what we're thinking about here, if we think about a traditional March-born calf, you know, weaning in October or early November, somewhere in there, a 550 to 600-pound calf is not uncommon. If we're thinking about a May-June-born calf, we're going to be looking at weaning that calf later if we weaning them at the same days of age. The other thing we need to understand is that that March-April calf, they're really starting to eat quite a bit of this higher quality feed in late May and June, where this May-June-born calf, you know, they're still nursing, getting quite a bit of their nutrients in May and June. Not that they're not grazing at all, but most of their nutrition is coming from the dam, not from what they're grazing. And so I think there's scenarios then where that calf starts to get to be old enough to start to graze. The quality of the forage that they're grazing is less than their counterpart that was born 2-3 months earlier. So I think that has an impact on weaning weights. I think also the quality of the forage that that cow is on can be impacting the amount of milk that she potentially produces. So it's a complicated thing to say this or that, but again, thinking about the whole system, realizing that probably these later born calves are going to wean at a lighter weight than some of those March calves would be at the same days of age.
We are going to well exceed a half an hour here if we continue at the same pace, but I do want to give you an opportunity, and sorry I didn't warn you about this, but I do want to give you an opportunity to speak a little bit about the High Plains Ranch Practicum. The first class is coming up here in a couple 3 weeks, and first of the classes of the this last High Plains Ranch Practicum is coming up here in a couple of or 3 weeks. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to share a little bit about that. We are recording this on May 24th. So if the registration isn't already full, give people one last opportunity to consider joining you in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Yeah. So at this point, we still have opportunities for folks to come join us. And I guess when this is released, it'll be a little bit after our deadline, but if folks have an interest and still want to participate, they can contact myself or Dallas Mount. And if we still have space, we'd sure welcome them to join us. I'm really excited about this class. This is going to be the last one that we do. Really have an excellent lineup of presenters, ranchers who have been in the industry, who are effective and good at what they do. And that together with, I think, the curriculum that we provide really provides a great learning experience. And the camaraderie, exchange of ideas, the opportunity to challenge one another really fosters an environment where I think learning occurs. And so excited about this last High Plains Ranch Practicum, and would encourage folks, if they would like to still participate and they're hearing this podcast, give us a call, and if we can get you in, we will.
Very good. Appreciate that. I'll probably turn that into a promotion that I'll release with some of my podcasts that are coming out before this one. So appreciate that. So one of the other questions that you ask is, what will the impact of a change in calving season due to the selection and development of replacement heifers. The genetics, you say the genetics that performed acceptably under an early spring calving season with harvested feed may not perform reproductively the same in a later calving season. And I've got anecdotal evidence to say that was true. Now, this is a young heifer. she's still growing, and she's one that we're going to use as a replacement, but she does not look like much of a heifer now. But she came out of a very high feed early calving system, and we're in a April calving system on my dad's ranch, and she doesn't look like an AI'd heifer calf out of a AI'd heifer mother. She looks pretty rough right now, but we'll see what she shapes up into. Can you talk a little bit about what you're thinking about there as far as these genetics being different from one that was on a high forage or high harvested feed diet to one that's on a high forage diet, standing forage?
Yeah. So that's kind of what I was referring to earlier. I think if you've really been pushing for really high production type genetics in a March type calving system and, you know, providing harvested feed and then breeding those cows on the best forage of the year, recognizing that you might need to consider significantly changing your genetics if you move to a much later calving is important. And I think you have to ask the question, should I move the cows in terms of just change the breeding season, or should I exchange these cows that I currently have for some genetics that better fit what I'm wanting to do in terms of when I calve? And that's, I think, something you got to wrestle through. I think the other thing, economically, typically, I would say in the Northern Great Plains, a March calving cow, a four-year-old, five-year-old March calving cow that went to a bred cow sale is going to bring more in many cases than a mid-May to mid-June calving cow. So just understanding that if you change calving date, you've changed the net worth of your cow herd also, and thinking that through. And I think you have to ask the question, should I sell my early calving cows to someone else and go find somebody or find some cows that are maybe a little more adapted to this later calving season and make that work? I think another thing you might want to consider is maybe should I just go to a terminal system? Should I look at buying other people's later calving cows? And some folks say, well, you're just getting their later calvers or cows that are less reproductive. And I think that's a fair challenge. But I think also then you can have a terminal system. You're not messing with developing replacement heifers. So there's some advantages there also. So I think if you're thinking about changing your calving season, you want to also think about what else could I do or what could I do differently than I am now that might better fit this timing I'm thinking about from a calving standpoint. If you are going to develop your own replacement heifers, I think there is a scenario where you can challenge those heifers a little more through the winter. And then in the spring, they're going to be on a high plane of nutrition, maybe right prior to or right close to the breeding season, depending on if you calve your heifers ahead of your cows. And so we could develop those heifers on a less expensive feed resource through the winter and save some money there. And that can have some advantage also.
Aaron, your previous appearances on the Working Cows podcast will be linked at the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/96. And we have talked about, I know I'm reasonably certain you and I have talked about on the podcast, what opportunities would a change in calving season provide to collaborate with other producers. And I think specifically use of bulls and other things that you could share with a producer who's calving earlier, or maybe even a fall calver who's calving later. So I don't want to spend too much on that. One of the things that really stuck out to me personally, because it reflects the situation that I find myself in, is how will a change in calving impact the logistics of the overall operation? And you're talking about other enterprises on the same business that might be ramping up at the same time as the cow herd needs a lot of attention with a May and June calving situation, or the other things that might be going on that could pull you away from being able to pay all the attention to that cow herd that they need. And so I think basically this whole article to me reflects the need for us to be systems thinkers in this industry. And I know that's a big part of what you guys do at the High Plains Ranch Practicum is challenging people to think from a systems standpoint. Can you talk a little bit about systems thinking and that specifically of how will it change or impact the logistics of the overall operation?
Yeah. So I think as we think about production systems, obviously moving a calving date significantly, like maybe if we're going to move 2 months, is a big deal. It's just not turning the bulls out 2 months later. And think about logistics. Again, if I have a scenario where maybe all my pasture is owned and it's all contiguous, it's not such a big deal to think about moving pairs. But if I'm moving pairs a long ways away, going with a March calving cow and a calf to grass, if they got to get on a trailer or get in a semi, is a little different scenario than if I'm thinking about a May calf that's maybe only a couple weeks old and I'm getting on a truck. You know, then I think some people say, well, you just move the cows as pregnant cows and they're going to calve on where they're going to end up. And I think, again, that can be the case also. I think in many cases, folks are used to tagging the calves at birth and pairing them out and spending quite a bit of time with them. Does that need to be done? I think we could have a conversation around that. Obviously, cows don't read air tags. They know who their calf is. But I think it's a challenge for us as we think about if we are going to move to a later calving and we also have farming that's part of the operation, are we going to be able to just turn those cows out and say, hey, I'll check you once a day and I'll kind of help with sunny wrecks, but you girls are on your own, where maybe before you were planning to see those cows every 6 hours. Those are just some different things, I think, logistically. Not that you can't do that, and I think it can be done, but I think it's a change of thinking and it's a change in how things are managed. And so if you have to haul pairs or you have a lot of work when you are calving, you got to realize that you may not spend the time that you normally would with those cows and recognize some of the challenges that come with that.
You talk a little bit about finding people who've been down that road ahead of you. Are there places where you can usually find those people, different organizations that you can go and find people who are already made these changes that you can talk to? Or is there any resources like that that you can think of?
I guess I'd encourage people to use their network. I think as much as possible, try to find somebody who's in a similar environment to where you are, who's already made the change or has made a change and figured out how to make it work, and maybe they're a few years down the road. You know, that's to me the one that's the strongest thing. Go to see what they do, ask them about the change they made, what went well, what didn't go well, what would they do differently if they were to do it again. Those can be really some insightful conversations that can give some thought to, if you're going to make the change, what are some things you should be prepared for and how can you do that most effectively with the minimization of some problems that can occur.
And you mentioned in the closing paragraph of your article, numerous long-term research studies by the University of Nebraska have compared different calving dates and production systems. And I was wondering if we could get a link to share with people that they could look at some of these studies.
Yeah, you just go to the beef.unl.edu website. Some really good systems works that's been done, looking at a March calving, May calving, and also a late summer calving, looking at cows that maybe are using predominantly crop residue in the fall or those that are on a sandhills range type scenario. So again, different people have different resources, but you can learn some things from seeing some research that's been done and thinking about your own production system and what things you might use from that research to help you make a decision.
You say that there's no perfect time to calve in Nebraska, so I guess I'll go this direction as we wrap up. We've talked a lot about the differences between March and maybe early April and May and June calving. Is there any argument for fall calving, or is that something that you don't see as a viable option necessarily?
Well, if I was in the middle of corn country and I had access to a lot of corn stalks, which in some cases are not quite free, but close to free, I would seriously be looking at a late summer fall calving cow. Because in many cases, even if I had to provide supplement, the cost of that is still less than it would be if I had to go rent grass for a spring calving cow. And in some scenarios, there's no grass to be rented. So I work with some folks currently that calve late summer, and those dry cows get on a truck and go quite a ways for the summer for pasture and then come back to the farm and graze crop residue as cow-calf pairs. They early wean the calves and the cows graze some crop residue and then are dry lotted for a part of the spring prior to going back to grass. So that's part of that conversation we had earlier. You got to think about your production system. You got to think about, what are my resources available to me? What's my most available, least expensive feed resource? And is there a way I can try to match that cow with what I have available? So I guess I would say, yes, Clay, I think there's some scenarios where fall calving certainly is a good fit. And I think Specifically, we think about listeners from the Southeast who are on predominantly fescue. Some scenarios there where fall calving, sure, from a research perspective, has some real advantages. Again, it's trying to think about what I have available to me and how can I best match my calving season with that resource.
Very good. Aaron, can you talk a little bit about your podcast, about the Beef Watch podcast?
Yeah, so the Beef Watch podcast, I've been involved with that part now for almost 18 months. And again, it's a companion to the UNL Beef Watch newsletter, which is the monthly newsletter. And then I also try to include, not once every month, every 6 weeks, a producer perspective on a topic. And then also about 5-6 times a year, have a market outlook, get some perspective there from an ag economist just to get some ideas on what they see taking place in the marketplace and from what's happening in terms of cattle prices. So continue to see increased listenership to that. I think it fills a niche for folks that spend a lot of time behind the wheel of a pickup or a tractor and hopefully uses that time effectively for them.
Sure. Yeah. Very good. I appreciate the positive outlook of the Beef Watch podcast and appreciate the resource that it has been. I think it has been linked at the workingcows.net/resources page since day one. So very much appreciate that and the newsletter and hope that you continue to reach a broader and broader audience with that.
Thanks, Clay.
Thanks for your time today, Aaron.
Appreciate it.
I really appreciate Aaron and his ability to articulate these concepts in a way that's easy to understand, and really appreciate him taking time to join me for this episode. Next week, I think I'm going to go solo for an episode for you guys and talk to you about something that's been on my mind and some of those things. And got a couple of guests I'm trying to nail down for future episodes. So for right now, I know next week we're going to go solo on an episode, and hopefully it'll be released just a couple days after you're hearing this. Fingers crossed that I can keep on schedule here. So regarding the schedule and some of those things, I guess my first responsibility is to my family, and try not to neglect them for the sake of the podcast ever. And second after that is my responsibility to my church. If I fail at home, I fail in ministry, and certainly am not going to fail at home or in order to succeed as a podcaster. So sorry about that, but that's where my priorities lie, and I just appreciate your patience and appreciate you guys being willing to maybe go back to the other 95 episodes that I've released if maybe listen to some of them for a second time and or go find some on the resources page and look at some of the other podcasts I have listed there, or I keep hearing of new ag related podcasts coming on, or go to the globalagnetwork.com and look at some of those. That's just globalagnetwork.com. Look at some of those podcasts and see if there's something there that can maybe challenge your paradigm some too. So any case, appreciate your patience, and we'll be back next week for a solo episode. And we're going to talk about asking why when we, in our ranch businesses, asking why in our ranch businesses next week on the Working Cows podcast. And we'll see you again real soon.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.